From Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas, this is Dugout Dirt, a Texas Rangers podcast. It's a baseball podcast about everything that happens outside the chalk lines.
One thing that I really want the fans to know is that the marketing department exists in this organization to try to bring the fans closer to the club.
It's not a job, it's a life.
You know, the best compliments I ever get are when I receive a message or a letter from a blind person who says, I feel like I can see the game.
I've been fortunate to kind of help him put this group together. And there's a lot of special people and, makes coming to work fun every day.
Flood of emotions, relief, excitement, elation. I knew that I carried a trailer of people with me that 90 feet.
After he was finished, I just kind of raised my hand and said, okay, which wall do you want me to run through?
For me, the backbone in everything you do in baseball has to do with scouting. And anyone who talks about a competitive advantage that's anything but scouting, I think is probably misled.
That was Texas Rangers Assistant General Manager Thad Levine. You will hear from him throughout this episode, as well as Manager of Amateur Scouting Matt Clotchy and Ranger Scout Todd Guggiani. And as you know, my name is Jared Couch, and on this episode of Dugout Dirt, we are diving into the world of scouting and the MLB draft. The 2015 draft is in the books, and we wanted to take a look at how the Texas Rangers organization goes about finding players and bringing them into the organization. Now, originally, this was supposed to be a one podcast episode on scouting and drafting combined, but we did so many interviews and came up with so much great content, we're going to split it in two. So this first one's going to be mainly about scouting, and then on our next episode, it'll focus on this year's MLB draft. So with that, we start our discussion on scouting with the manager of amateur scouting. I introduced him earlier, Matt Clotchy, on what exactly is scouting.
What is the goal of scouting?
The goal of scouting is to accumulate, the best possible talent with the most information that we can gather on that player. So, I mean, we obviously look for something called tools in offensive players. And that's the ability to hit for power, run, defend, and their arm strength. And for pitchers, we're looking at, size, athleticism, obviously how, fastball velocity, how good their stuff is, their curveball, their slider, their changeup, whatever their secondary pitches are. And then, we're looking at, delivery and arm action. Can the player repeat it? Do we see him as like an injury risk? So we kind of factor everything, we factor in, overall talent on the field, but what we also do is we dig very deep into, how that player competes. We'll talk to coaches, we'll talk to other players, we'll, dig as much as we can, and we want to know what that player is off the field too. So we want to get the best combination of talent and then overall character and makeup. That's kind of our goal.
For Ranger Scout Todd Guggiani, the plan was always to be in baseball, but not as a scout. He was originally drafted by the Texas Rangers in 1991. But eventually found himself making a career change.
So how does one become a scout?
I think guys have come from all different avenues to be a scout. I mean, my path was, I was actually signed by the Rangers at Long Beach State in 1990. Played 4.5 years in the minor leagues for us, and then 1.5 years later was hired by the scout who originally signed me, named Lenny Strelitz, who became a scouting director. So called me and said, hey, would you be interested in scouting? I was coaching high school baseball with my dad at the time, and he gave me the opportunity in 1996, and I've been here, for 19 years.
So what's the lifestyle like for you, like a typical day?
A day at home? The good thing about this job is we generally don't have to go to work until about 12:30 or 1 o'clock because the games are all in the afternoon on a weekday. But a day could be a Tuesday. Say Tuesday is generally a night that colleges play. So I can see a high school game at 3, 3:15, and then run to a local college game at 7 that night, see two games. The weekends are, usually much more busy where there's a lot of games going on, maybe see 2, 3, 4 games in a day on certain weekend days. So
are you just in the stands furiously scribbling notes?
I wouldn't call it furiously scribbling. I mean, I have decent recall, so I do take notes. If I like the player that I went to see, you know, go back that night or the next morning and write a report on the player, you know, and send it into the office here so everyone gets a look at what I just saw, who I reported on, what grade I put on him, where I think he should be drafted, his, you know, potential role in the major leagues if, you know, if everything, you know, comes to fruition that you think might. So that's it. And then do video. We do video stuff. So we'll video the player and upload that video into our system, and that also gets distributed so everyone can have a look who might not get a chance to see him live.
Depending on where a scout is located within the country can heavily dictate the amount of travel and the lifestyle a scout leads.
Are they on the road all the time? Is this like a consultant thing where they fly out on Monday and get back home on Thursday?
It really depends. It depends on the area. So if you have a smaller area, you know, say South Florida or, you know, Southern California, you can spend a lot of nights, you know, at home. You see your games during the day, at night, and then you're home. If you have a larger area and players are more spread out, say in the Northeast, we don't have a concentrated area of talent per se. You know, you can have just as much talent in upstate New York one year as you have in eastern Massachusetts the next year. You know, you're running around a lot more. You're spending many more nights in the hotel. So I'd say it's a lot, you know, tougher from a lifestyle, from a travel standpoint and miles driven.
Just like an organizational chart in a traditional business, there's a hierarchy in the scouting world.
If you think of it as a pyramid, you have the area scouts and then the regional cross-checkers above the area scouts for each region. So that's West Coast, Southeast, Midwest, and East Coast. And then we have two national cross-checkers who kind of go out to see the best players in the country. And then we have our scouting director, Kip Fagg, who, you know, makes the final calls on those players.
There's a ladder decline in the scouting community. They start out, you know, whether it's an amateur, professional, international scouting, but they all aspire to be the title of special assistant to the general manager. The scout that is the most valued talent evaluator sits in the inner circle for the general manager, involved in all decisions, big picture and small.
In addition to scouts across the United States, there is an intense competition around the globe. Scouts are scattered across the world looking for the next great player.
How do you go about covering not only the United States, but the entire baseball playing population?
I think one of the biggest challenges we face as a front office is managing a group of people that are that geographically spread out. Total worldwide, we probably have close to 45 scouts, and that's spanning from the Pacific Rim to Latin America to the United States. You have to make them feel like they're part of something special, and our goal when we manage those people is to communicate with them enough so that when a fan in the stands asks them, hey, what do? Their first answer is, I'm a Texas Rangers scout, rather than I just evaluate players or I'm just working in the game of baseball. We want them to have a connection to us, and it's that communication that I think ties those scouts back to us, gets the pipeline of information going from the far reaches of Taiwan, Venezuela, Canada, United States, all back to the front office here in Arlington, Texas.
The backgrounds of scouts vary. Some have extensive baseball playing backgrounds, while others never touched a major league field as a player. And while experience helps evaluate players, it's not the be-all end-all when it comes to being a successful scout.
When you're looking at guys, potential scouts that you want to bring on board, what are you looking for?
I want to see somebody who's open-minded, somebody who's willing to take a chance, somebody who likes players. You know, you don't want somebody going out there and telling you everything that's wrong with a player. You want them to tell you why they think that player has a chance, has a high upside, and then has a chance to realize that potential or even overachieve that. So somebody who's willing to take a chance, somebody who has a big picture vision, wants to make some recommendations to you of some trades, things that they can do to help within our own organization. But somebody who sees himself as far more than just a guy who sits in the stands and evaluates players.
I mean, they have to be able to evaluate talent. They have to be able to see the player and have a good feel for that player is and what that player will be. Work ethic is a huge part also. These guys are going to multiple games a day. They're driving around. They're trying, you know, some scouts feel like it's not a good day unless they've, you know, gone to three games. So work ethic's important. And not just going to the game, but also like digging deep on these players and getting to know the players and getting to know the families. Our scout up in the Northeast, he's been invited to Thanksgiving dinners because he knows Takashi Sakuriyama, because he's developed such good relationships with the families that they welcome him into their home. So it's really about going the extra mile.
Relationships are key to almost anything in life, but especially in the scouting world.
You have to have connections. I mean, you have to have coaching connections, and those take a while to build up. So you can't really be decent at this job, in my opinion, until about your fourth or fifth year, when you've kind of got a feel for who you can trust.
Scouts are often looking for intangible characteristics, traits you can only observe by laying eyes on a player.
When you first go look at a guy, is there any specific thing you're looking for?
Some guys have tools, look right maybe at a workout, can hit the ball a mile, but getting them in a game, they can't really react to the speed of the game. Instincts you want to evaluate, which are not something that are real measurable by a stopwatch or a radar gun. Just things that you have instinctively from playing and scouting for all these years. You're like, okay, that guy reminds me of so-and-so, and I think his tool set and his instincts, so to speak, will give this guy a chance to be a major leaguer at some point.
How many guys, players, do you scout in a given year?
Report-wise, how many reports do I write in my area? Generally between 40 and 60, depending on the given year. So 40 to 60 guys who you think are potential, possible major leaguers. In order to get to my 50 reports, I might see a couple hundred players. So I'm not turning in a report on every guy that I see. Now you go to see him, you're like, he's not, you know, what I thought he was, or he's not a guy that we're interested in. So then you just move on and then go to the next guy.
We've all been a teenager at one point, unless you're below the age of 13 listening to this podcast. But think back, could you imagine trying to evaluate the potential of a teenager? I mean, you're talking about a kid with so much unpredictability. I would have hate to have a scout try to figure out, you know, project what kind of baseball player I was going to be at 22, 23, or 24. Well, that's exactly what these scouts do. They're out there evaluating 16, 17 year olds and trying to project them 5-10 years down the road.
So these are obviously very young kids. How do you, are there other factors outside of baseball that you're looking at to make a judgment on whether this is a guy you, the organization would be
sure.
interested in?
Sure. I mean, we're very big on around here as far as trying to get a feel for, you know, what's the kid's makeup? Where does he come from? What's his background? So with high school players that I have interest in, I will do a home visit with them, you know, before the draft, either in the wintertime or sometime in the spring. Talk to their parents, you know, talk to the kid one-on-one in their, you know, in the setting in their house. You know, just ask certain questions or just let them talk and just kind of get a feel for, hey, is this guy really genuine about what he wants to do? Is he a hard worker? I guess that's probably the hardest part of our job, is trying to make an assessment what kind of person he is, what kind of worker he's going to be. So, yeah, you use all these factors along with the physical traits to try to, you know, put together the best possible opinion on a guy that you could have.
These guys, you know, the vast majority play themselves, and they play, you know, through the upper levels. So, I mean, that's a great kind of point to start talking baseball with them, and, you know, they talk about their experiences and their, you know, their bevy of knowledge, and they can answer a ton of questions these kids have and their families have, because they have a lot of questions.
Now, evaluating a teenager might seem difficult, but imagine the job of our scouts in Latin America. They are evaluating preteens and then making evaluations for a major league club to sign a 16-year-old to a multi-million-dollar contract.
In Latin America, you're evaluating, what, 15, 16-year-olds? How do you go about doing that?
Well, really, down there now, you can sign them when they're 16. So we have our scouts start evaluating them when they're about 12 and 13 years old. So it's a whole different science. Like that form of scouting is so unique. You've got to get in the grassroots. You really have to dream on players, because the other thing that's a limiting factor is you don't see them playing games by and large. They're just working out. So you'll see batting practice. You'll see infield. You may see the guy throw 10 to 15 pitches on the mound. You've got to dream it. What is that going to look like in a game setting? Also, what is he going to look like when he matures? A lot of these kids haven't even really hit puberty yet, and you're making decisions about whether or not they're players that the Texas Rangers should invest real money, real time developing. So the guys down in Latin America, I think, do an exceptional job, but it's a unique brand of scouting, different from anything we do in the rest of the game of baseball.
How do you go about making those large investments in what they call the bonus babies? And I guess they put a cap on it now, but before there was, you know, large amounts of money being thrown around.
You got to rely on your scouts. You know, when you're evaluating down in that type of arena where there's so many unknowns, it's about getting to know the kid, getting to know his family, understand what types of influences around him. You know, you look at the father and the mother. Is this kid going to grow? Is he going to become more of a physical individual? You can gauge a lot by seeing what the parents look like. But also, is he intelligent? Is he got some athleticism? Does he have a chance to really learn the game of baseball? Or are you throwing money away? So I think you rely heavily on the scouts and those relationships they build with the players and the players' families.
The Texas Rangers front office is notorious for selecting what they call toolsy baseball players. Guys that may be a bit raw as far as baseball skills go, but are extremely athletic or have one particular skill that is amazing. It could be speed, power bat, or power arm.
The Rangers are notorious for taking like very raw athletic players. What's the mindset behind that? What reason?
The mindset's twofold. One is when you see guys on a big league field, you know, these guys are toolsy. They're big, physical. They run fast. You know, they have good arms and they have power. I mean, that's what makes impact at the major league level. We also have a tremendous amount of confidence in our player development staff, and we know we can give pieces of clay. To player development, and they'll mold it into a usable player, get the most out of that player. Now, there's always players who don't, always reach their ceiling, but our feeling is if we give enough of those players chances and opportunities in the system, you'll hit big on some of those guys.
A lot of times, organizational philosophy is implemented from the top down. The scouting philosophy works in a bottom-up type system.
One thing I always hear from writers is that the Rangers have a philosophy of taking toolsy athletic players. Is that an organizational philosophy that it kind of funnels down to the scouts on the ground?
That's exactly where it starts. I mean, that's where it emanates, that whole philosophy. We'll always take the guy who's a little bit more athletic. We want to take the guys who have high upside, but who have high aptitude and high athleticism. Those are the types of people we think can really overachieve what their God-given talents are. So we challenge our scouts in the offseason, go watch football games, go watch swim meets, track meets, volleyball games, find the best athlete in that event and find out if they have any interest in playing baseball. And if they do, we'll take a chance on them. Because we think if you give us a raw athlete, we're going to be able to build a baseball player.
This philosophy of going for raw, unrefined baseball players as opposed to polished baseball players that have produced at the college level is often counterintuitive to most fans.
The only absolute is that there are no absolutes. We don't want to be pigeonholed as, hey, we only want the toolsy high schoolers. We don't want, the college performers, because that's not the case. We want to evaluate everybody individually. And, I think if you have too widespread of a philosophy, a lot of players fall through the cracks there, and we don't want that to happen.
Moneyball made everyone believe computers were making baseball decisions, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
When you're evaluating, I say you probably wouldn't do as much with high school players, but with college players, how do you balance the statistics and performance on the field with the upside?
We asked the scouts to kind of put the statistics off to the side, let your eyes tell you whether or not this is a really talented player. But then secondarily, we have guys in the office who evaluate these statistics, carve them up every single way you possibly can.
Looking at purely numbers and results, some fans may be clamoring for the Rangers to select a successful college player, while the scouts are telling front office decision makers that an unknown kid is the better pick because of his projectability.
So you talk about tools. It's not always about results at that level, correct?
Not always. There's a player we drafted a few years back, Ryan Cordell, who actually, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think his draft eligible year as a junior in college at Liberty, I think he only hit about 260 or so, and now he's up in high A right now, hitting 300 with, a dozen home runs, and he's hit at every level. And he's a guy our area scout really liked. He had a gut feel for him. And he thought that he was, an athletic, toolsy player who would benefit from pro coaching. And so far, he's been right. So that's kind of the story of a guy who didn't necessarily succeed in college, but we felt he had, tools, and, we wanted to give him the player development, so he can improve.
And that'll do it for another episode of Dugout Dirt. This was our first part in a two-part series on scouting and drafting. Join us next time as we'll continue our conversations with the assistant general manager of the Texas Rangers, Thad Levine, scout Todd Guggiani, and manager of amateur scouting, Matt Clotchy. and you'll get a little insight on one of the Rangers' biggest hits in the draft, Joey Gallo, and their first round pick from this year, Dylan Tate. I'd also like to thank everybody in the marketing department, including Becky Kimbrough, Sarah Stone, Anissa Pruitt, and everyone else at the Texas Rangers who made this possible. For more original Texas Rangers content, please visit texasrangers.com/neverever quit. This podcast can always be found on iTunes or texasrangers.com/podcast. And as always, my name is Jared Couch, and we'll talk to you next time.